הפרק הזה הוקלט לפני אירועי השביעי באוקטובר. אמנם נושא הפרק לא קשור, אבל אני מתנצלת מראש אם יש דברים שישמעו מנותקים מהקונטקסט הזה. מאחלת לכם האזנה נעימה.
המחלה חלה סרטן. מדברים על סרטן בצעירים.
Hi everybody and welcome to the disease podcast Amachala as we call it in Hebrew. I'm Anat Shapiro, I'm 42 years old. I'm Lior's wife and Aryan Liv's mother and I'm an entrepreneur and a patient advocate and a podcaster. And I'm a breast cancer survivor and I had the great privilege of being treated here in Israel and living in Israel and being an Israeli using the Israeli healthcare system which I have a lot of good things to say about. I know they in general there's a lot of bad talk about it, but it is a public health system which allowed me to be here right now. And I was also privileged to be treated in Ichilov, which is a walking distance from my home, and it's a great hospital that has a lot of connection and researchers and a lot of those stuff. But it's this episode is being recorded in English because it's not the situation for every members of our community. We have community members here in Hala Sertan who are being treated in Israel, who are not native speakers, who are expats or new immigrants, and we have community members that are being treated overseas, which we did an episode about. And there are Israeli who are immigrants to other places and being treated over there. And I think that each of those situations is different. And we wanted to record this episode in English so we can give more access to Chala Sertan and other community members that are dealing with this, to have some more information and to talk about the difficulties of being a non-Hebrew native speaker being treated in Israel. But before I will introduce you to our two guests today, I have a few disclaimers. If this is the first time you're listening to our podcast, it's usually being recorded in Hebrew. As you can hear, I'm not an English native speaker, so I will make mistakes, so I'm apologizing in advance. Another thing is that being an English speaker is different than being a Russian speaker or being an Arab speaker in Israel, and I want to acknowledge that before we begin. We will not talk about it as much here at the podcast because it's not the subject of our episode, but it is important to acknowledge that and the difficulties of being a non-Hebrew speaker and coming from a different background here in Israel. That being said, I think we can start with our first ever English episode. We have two amazing members of our community here. We have Hila.
Hello.
Hila K. Melamed. Lamka. I'm not sure.
It's too long for anyone to remember. Honestly, it's just travesty. I shouldn't be allowed to walk around with so many surnames, but that's the case. I think Hila K.
Hila K. Okay, that's how she's known in our community. Yeah. Hila K. Which also works in Hala Sertan.
That's right. I'm gonna introduce myself.
Then. Yes.
So I'm Hila K. I'm 42 years old. I'm also a mother of three, breast cancer survivor. I volunteered for a while in Chala Sertan. I also became a community member through treatment. Chalas did a lot for me, and I thank them for it. And luckily, they poached me and said, come along and do some more work. And I took the role for partnerships from Reut. She's gone on maternity leave, and I'm enjoying every moment of it. And yes, I think it's really important. Now, I'm going to say just a few things, and then obviously we're going to introduce Patty. So I'll just say about myself. I came back to Israel 4 years ago. Most of my life I lived abroad. I lived in six countries. And so I've got a bit of an interesting perspective in regards to different healthcare systems abroad. And I think I'd like to bring that to the table today.
Okay, that's great because we need that. And I would also like to introduce Patricia, Patty, as I call her. Hi, Patty.
Hi, my name is Patty or Patricia. I'm 41 years old. I was diagnosed with breast cancer when I was 39. I am a pastry chef and a mother to a six-year-old. And wife to a native Jerusalem resident, and we've been back and forth. We met in New York, where I'm originally from, and we've been back and forth between Israel and New York for the past 17 years.
You were both diagnosed in Israel, right?
Yeah. Can I just take a second to play this game where you play in the diaspora, the Jews in the diaspora of...
I love that game.
You know what game I'm talking about, right? So I just want to connect with you, and I'll say, I'll come out of the closet and say, I used to be a pastry chef as well, and I am married to a native Jerusalem boy.
I told you guys, so, yes. You're going to...
We're going to connect. We're going to find that route of where we're both from, and probably...
There you go.
Yes, the Jewish heritage. sorry. Let's get back on track.
No, that's okay. I need that. I need
that cultural kind of awareness of what we do abroad.
Of course, because that's the main thing. Because once you're a non-Israeli diagnosed in Israel, you don't have that. So I'm really happy that you have all those match point. I don't know how to call that.
Yes,
I'm not an idiot.
Okay.
Take it away.
It's all right. I'll answer first, Patty. Is that all right?
Sure.
I was diagnosed here, but this is really an important point, which I have to say is that later on I found out that probably I was, I've been carrying this for a while because my diagnosis was quite advanced. And there was a lump that was found after my second son was born in England. And I went to get it ultrasound and mammograph, and they said, it's all right, you've got nodular breasts. That's what they called it in the UK. And it's all right, because some women have nodular breasts, and
sounds extra British.
Yes, and they said, you're also breastfeeding, so we'll leave it at that. And there was no recommendation to do any follow-up whatsoever. And this important fact erased from my brain completely. And when I was diagnosed here, and they asked me, you know, this has gone quite far, you know, did you not feel it earlier? Was there a previous diagnosis? I said no. And only later on that kind of popped up in my head. And I said, wait, 5 years ago in the UK, this is what happened. So I think that is an aspect that's maybe differentiating between the healthcare system here in Israel, where follow-up is, it's all about the follow-up, and they do talk to you about that. And in the UK, where they kind of, maybe it's a budget restraint or you know, maybe it's an awareness thing, they said to me, off you go on your way.
That's scary and amazing, because you could have been diagnosed, but it can actually happen here, because I was being told come back in 6 months. I was the 1%, which was cancerous, so that can happen elsewhere. But I think being diagnosed here, there's a method. Like, I've been listening to a British podcast about cancer, and they've been like, they came with a lump, and at the end of the day, they knew they had cancer. So I'm guessing there are many differences between each healthcare system and different countries. How do you think it would have been in the US for you, Patty?
Aside from the fact that both the UK and Israel have national healthcare services, and so the cost of what you pay out of pocket here is, it's pretty much nothing. I think I paid the sum total of 16 shekels for some non-necessary sleeping medication to help me during chemo. Whereas in the U.S., it can be astronomical, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars if you don't have insurance. And sometimes even if you do have insurance, it depends how good it is. And it's funny, I was listening to your story about this diagnosis. I found my lump as well in the States. It was right after I had gotten my corona vaccine, and my physician said, enlarged lymph nodes are a common side effect from the vaccination, and sent me on my way. And so I think the moral is, you need to advocate for yourself. You need to definitely be the one to speak up and say, no, I think this is really important and we should check it out. You, of course, don't know that when you're before you're in it.
It's extra hard doing that in a foreign language. I mean, doing that in Israel, mm-hmm. also, it's a story that we hear over here as well, especially for women after giving birth. When breastfeeding, it's a story that we hear a lot about self-advocating and standing up for yourself. I think it's extra hard doing that in a different language.
Not just a different language, I think.
With a different culture.
Yes, exactly. I think culturally, growing up in the UK and other countries, you're much more about, you know, keeping silent and authority and respecting authority. And so you feel like you're in the right hands and the doctor knows better than anybody else and you wouldn't question it whatsoever. But something beautiful that happened to me when I came to Israel was I had a cultural awareness program. And within that, it was quite imminent for them to say to us, the first thing you should know in Israel is that there's no such thing as no. Okay, the secretary might say no, the doctor might say no, you know, the shopkeeper might say no, but it's not necessarily because they can't help you. It's because right at that moment, that might not be convenient for them. And therefore, you should go and do whatever is necessary to get what you need.
I wish I had that quote.
And that kind of broke that stigma of understanding, okay, I can't be a patient here. I can't be standing in line and queuing up like you do in the UK, but I'm going to have to push forward whatever it is that I believe in. And I understand there's no such thing as no, which is an amazing opportunity for me to go and reach whichever method is possible to get this, whatever it is going on. Yeah.
I remember hearing when my doctor called me and said that it was the biopsy came back. It is cancer. I remember like having this blur. She had to repeat everything twice. I had to write it down. What was it like for you hearing that? Like,
wow. I think that I got my results back and I didn't really look at them until I went to my doctor. I think that was a policy of mine throughout my whole treatment of like, I can go down the rabbit hole really easily. And I think that, I made a point of saying, okay, I'm not going to look at this until I'm sitting with my doctor. And the initial surgeon that I saw was not actually the surgeon I ended up using, but is another really well-known and well-respected surgeon in Tel Aviv, who sat with me for 2 hours to explain my diagnosis and the different types of breast cancer, IDC, invasive ductal carcinoma versus ductal carcinoma, you know, the difference between triple positive and triple negative and, you know, and what HER2 is and all of these things that, you know, when you don't have breast cancer, would you know these
things? Yeah, you think breast cancer is just one disease.
And I think another reason that I was really lucky was this particular doctor had an excellent grasp of English. And so I didn't miss anything with my initial diagnosis. It was only later on when I started, you know, going to chemo and getting involved, like the more personnel you add in your, you know, your life and your treatment, that the easier it is for you to miss important information. But at least with my initial diagnosis, I was super lucky that he was really thorough and his grasp of English was so good that I didn't feel I missed anything.
Absolutely.
Was it like that for you as well?
I think, no, it wasn't like that for me. I think even though I'm Hebrew native speaker, but I've lived most of my life abroad, I feel more confident and comfortable in English. Luckily, the prognosis is in English. So sometimes I knew a bit more than maybe the doctors thought I didn't or were able to tell me. I think that the Israeli healthcare system, apart from the English aspect of the language, they're really restricted in time. And so it really does depend if you're going to see a doctor privately or you're going through the normal route of the HMOs, and mine was Clalit. They have about, you know, 10 to 15 minutes to explain anything to you. So let's see how they can explain this to you in English, where they might not feel comfortable doing, but also in a way where they're, everybody's got their own technique, so their own philosophy of treatment. And the patient's journey is a bit different. You can generalize and say the UK is different to the US, to Israel, but also each doctor has their own philosophy of whether, how involved they want the patient to be. And I was lucky to go privately and have doctors just like Pam said, who was patient enough to sit down with me and explain the whole prognosis and the treatment, but and kind of helped me feel empowered to lead the way in the decision making. But that was after I paid to see someone. So through the HMOs, which I was first diagnosed with, I was not happy with the way that it was done. It was very brash. It was within 10 minutes out the room. I asked some questions. They said to me, get back to us later. There's no one I could contact because there's no email or a phone number that you can contact. And I think that's kind of like the key here. A, get private insurance. Sorry to say it, but it has to be done. Nobody wants to get insurance. It's necessary. And B, there are some amazing doctors through the HMOs. There really are. But because of time restraints and budget, sometimes the system is much slower. And when you're diagnosed at a later stage, then it becomes much more complicated.
How's it like? Being diagnosed and then having to tell everybody around you and people who live far away, how do you explain the condition? I know I decided to tell my father, like, only when I have a treatment plan, because I didn't want to throw him or take him with me through the entire process. But when your family lives far away, or you don't have many family around you, how was it for you?
I think I did all of the tests first. I didn't tell anyone in my family until I had my results back, mostly because I'm very close with my family and they're super supportive and wonderful people, and I'm very lucky, but they also worry. And I knew that being far and not having answers would be very difficult for them. It was very difficult for me. It was hard. I had to call everyone separately. You know, I didn't do FaceTime, which is rare for me, because I think I was crying more than anyone at that point. I think having them be so far away it's really hard. And the phone just kind of doesn't cut it. As it is, I was really lucky. All of my family came at some point during my treatment to either be with me and help out or just come, you know, spend time. And but it was, it's really hard. It's hard to express details. It's hard to gauge tone also sometimes on the phone. It felt really lacking, but, you know, the only option we have.
And did you find a support system, like a different support system here? Do you have to rely on your spouse's family?
I mean, because we have been back and forth so many times, and so I actually have like a fairly long history of being in Israel and not being in Israel. I do have some really wonderful, amazing friends who you know,
they become
set up
family.
A food tree for me, so they could help with cooking meals and stuff for my family. So that was what we had to deal with. People who lent us their cars, neighbors. My husband's family was—he has a brother here in Tel Aviv who was really helpful in terms of, you know, helping pick up and drop off my son who was in Ghan at that point. But I think. I think even so, there's something about, you know, having your family and your support system and navigating all of this in a place that is not your home that yeah. just makes it fundamentally more stressful and difficult by its very nature.
I agree. I think for myself, I was really lucky because I did have a support system. My parents are here. They moved. I convinced them. I moved back to Israel. I convinced
because
my parents
of your cancer? Or
No, they moved a few years back. So I was lucky to have my parents, my husband's parents, our siblings. Everybody helped out. I have friends who made Aliyah with me, so they're kind of lifelong friends, and they contributed as well. Everyone's been amazing, but the hardest thing I had to do, and I agree with Patty here, is to tell friends and really good friends or family members abroad, because the phone just, like she said, just doesn't cut it. You can't, all you want to do is kind of hug them when you tell them. You don't know how to say it. You kind of call up and you say, hi, so I've got something to tell you. And then you have to tell them, and you kind of very quickly brush it off and say, everything will be all right. I'm on this journey. It's all right. And, you know, you have to, at the same time of giving them the diagnosis, kind of support them through a phone conversation.
It's hard. One of my best friends, I was diagnosed in early August, and she flew on the 20th of July to a fellowship in Canada for 2 years, and she's a doctor, and she went with me for my first checkup, and talking to her, and that distance between us for the year and a half that I was in treatment, first of all, she helped me a lot from there, from Canada, because she talked to a lot of doctors and I could get some informal information, which I couldn't have gotten through the healthcare system over here, which I would like to discuss a bit later, but that was hard. I mean, that still is a thing. And I remember her reactions to everything that I said. Like, I remember when my Pat City came back okay, she was so relieved and she cried for me. Yeah. I was like, oh, I did not take that Pat City as seriously as she did. Yes. She was like this indicator.
You suddenly become a therapist as well for your environment. Anyway, happens when you're diagnosed sometimes. It depends on the relationship, but you have to support somebody and you have to support through the phone call. It's horrible.
It's hard.
It's horrible. Well, and, you know, what can you say?
Your emotional reaction to it too, you know, you have your own feelings about it and then somebody else has their feelings and they're asking you to take their feelings. You know, it's not an intentional thing. Nobody does it intentionally, but I think it's really difficult to regulate one's reactions when you have that kind of news in front of you.
And they don't have much to help you with. Like, basically, the main things you need help with, like, let's say, the kids or cooking
food,
or stuff.
Travel,
stuff like that, they can't help you with that.
That's true.
I mean,
it's true.
Did you guys, like, incorporate doctors from the UK or US in your treatment?
Yeah. Thank you. You see, Kimura brain. I was like, that's a really important point that I want to discuss, but I don't remember what we talked about a second ago. So yes, I think that is key for me, myself, and I. It was a key to recovery, to finding my solution, because I had to come up with a protocol that didn't just include the protocol from my oncologist. You need to have a curious mind, and you need to not just take everything and say, I'm going with the flow, whatever you tell me here, that's, you know, I'm gonna follow you as sheep do. I think it's really important to be curious about your cancer, to research your cancer, and then to see other options worldwide, because there's so many different treatments happening in different places. There are different policies in place, different protocols, and that ultimately enabled me to recover as quickly as I could from
Did you ever think about getting treatment in the UK or in the US? In the US, it's a bit different because of how much it costs.
For a second, I didn't consider.
No, yes. I don't think I can afford this ever. I can't imagine. I honestly can't imagine making decisions about your health based on budget.
But we all got Herceptin, which is like 90,000 shekels per treatment. I mean, those costs are unbelievable.
Yeah, and I know that in the UK it's not always given. It really is. They're quite cautious about who they give it to and what stage and so on. When did I decide to research further outside the Israel is when I had that kind of tactless doctor who said to me within the 15 minutes I had with her, you probably have less than 30% chance of success rate with the chemo protocol that we give in Israel.
And really?
I said, okay.
What?
And I said, okay, is there somewhere else where I could be looking? And she said, I advise you to look everywhere. And I said, okay. And I took that on board, and the initial shock was great. Thank you for that cultural. It is the Israeli. We're back to that question. You know, the Israel cultural of I'm going to say it as it is, and I'm not going to buttercoat it, and I don't care who's in front of me. I need to do my job, and I'm going to do it. I took it, and it shocked me. But
well,
it,
she saved
it
you.
Shocked me. Yes, exactly. It shocked me to being really active about finding a solution. So I think it's really important at any stage to have that kind of, whether you're English speaker, whether you're an immigrant, whatever, I always recommend. I think that is the key here, to feel empowered in your journey to recovery. So to be active in regards to making decisions, because at the end of the day, it's only a recommendation what the doctors give you. It's their recommendation based on obviously years of experience, but it's a recommendation, and you can decide, and you should be you know, feeling empowered enough to decide what's right for you.
But I mean, this entire process of being treated in Israel, you have so much things to consider and to know, and you don't know what you don't know. And how do you navigate? I mean, it's hard for Israeli and Hebrew speakers to navigate it. How do you how do you do that when you're not a foreign, when you're not a native speaker, and you're coming and a lot of people don't speak English or other languages as well? I mean, how do you do that? How can you navigate through everything?
Oh my God.
I think I've touched a point with Patty.
Patty, go for it.
It takes a lot. It's I think that I also, I'm the kind of person who I need more than one opinion. So I went to at least two of every doctor that I was told I needed to go to so that I could hear what different doctors were saying. Because like you say, you know, it's one doctor's opinion for treatment. Obviously it's based on experience, but I was, for instance, offered two totally different protocols, through two different facilities. And, you know, I ultimately decided, you know, it was my choice. But I took the protocol from one facility and did the treatment at a separate facility. I think that mostly you don't know these things. If you're lucky, you find, I was really lucky to find an English speaking Facebook group of breast cancer survivors and people going through treatment that was really instrumental in terms of, like the nitty gritty, all of the annoying things of the bureaucracy and how do I deal with this? And this is happening. What do I do? Because you really don't know. You know, I think the best you can do, honestly, is do your best to choose your team based on your comfort level and their ability to share information with you and have it be discussion instead of just a one-sided being told what to do. And I think if you're choosing the place that you feel comfortable to do your treatment, then generally you're more comfortable to ask questions or challenge things that seem questionable or maybe you're on the fence about.
I want to touch on that point, Patty, of sharing, just sharing. You know, talking to people around, maybe it's almost like a huge hurdle and some people, you know, decide to not share it. But I think for me, once I started talking about it, the more you talk about it, the more feedback and opinions you get. But you feel like you're a part of a community and you get advice about each part along the process. And those Facebook groups, we also have, for me, it was Khala Sartan, you know, went into a few other Facebook groups I didn't feel like I associated with. I didn't feel comfortable talking about. I posted something and their response was not as I expected. And when I got into Khalas and I was able to speak to peers about it and be a part of one of the growth groups as well that meets through Zoom, I was able to share my experience and really just question everything and understand that processes look different and that it's okay to speak about it, but also really seek out, be proactive. And I think the support group comes when you find that. So I agree with you.
Is that it, do you think, okay, because there's a cultural differences even in that, even in sharing your story. And although we are living in times where more people tell about their stories on Facebook and other social media outlets or write blogs about it, and it's a bit more normalized to talk about this process. I mean, it still is a lot of the time a very shallow conversation. I mean, they talk about being diagnosed and then having a marathon in the end and not the most part. But do you think that anything, did you think that you would talk about it as much or would be open to talk about it? I mean, being from the UK or from the US or different cultures, has it changed? You think that it would have been the same were you being treated in another country or something like that? I'm not sure.
Definitely not the same. For me personally, no way. I think culturally I was in the UK quite reclusive, communicative wise. And because for me, it's such a cultural thing of who to speak to. I'd probably speak to my friends. I wouldn't have shared it on social media. I would have just put my head down and gotten on with it. And in Israel, it's different. Everybody talks about everything in Israel. You know? Like, sometimes you don't want to listen to everything that somebody's got to say. But it's great because it gives you ideas of what, you know, what you might be going through. It relates. It helps you connect and relate to other people. And it there's something so therapeutic about talking about it. You know, that's why we're here today as well.
Yeah, kind of.
So no, it wouldn't have been the same for me in the UK. Definitely not.
Patty, was it the same for you?
No, I think, first off, my two best friends from university both had cancer. One had breast cancer and the other had non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And both were diagnosed before we were 35 years old.
Okay. So you had your own support system from...
I did. I really felt like I had two people who I knew so well, who knew me, who had been through this experience, who were really, you know, even though they were so far, supportive and, you know, answered. One is on the West Coast and one is in New York, so I had, you know, kind of somebody to talk to at any point during my day.
24 hours a day. Yeah,
really. I had 24 hour coverage.
Really clear.
I'm thinking how lucky was she, but that's like really the worst luck ever for all three of you to get cancer.
Yeah. I do think that Americans, we are a very like take charge, fix it kind of culture. We're very solution driven. And I think that while I would have felt comfortable talking about it, I think the way, and I experienced it here too, but I think the way that people react to it sometimes, to your having the conversation, for instance, with people who don't have cancer is, you know, there's this need or desire to paint a silver lining or to fix it or to try and, you know, turn that frown upside down. And it's kind of, it's sometimes counterintuitive to actually helping and making you feel seen and heard.
Yeah.
Especially when you're going through something so astronomically huge to your life, to have somebody else be like, oh, well, you know, a couple more months, this is all going to be over.
Yeah.
It feels dismissive.
Dismissive.
And it makes you feel, yeah, lonely with it mm-hmm. sometimes.
Yeah, I agree with that. It almost doesn't validate what you're going through.
Absolutely. Yes. Exactly.
What we, if you're meeting like a new English speaker being diagnosed over here in Israel, what would you recommend for them? What's your like golden advice to give them?
So first of all, I'm just throwing this out there. I am. I've got a few ladies in my net right now, unfortunately, that have been diagnosed. And
I'm
really
tagging
happy.
Patty in every yes. post that I see.
Every conversation, yeah. And I feel comfortable because I want to help. I want to help. I was given that help. I want to support. I want to break that barrier. I want to do that. I think, I would say the curiosity aspect. So to be proactive and to question and not just take whatever, you know, like Patty said, she has more than one recommendation that she goes to. So two opinions.
I have to say, it's very hard for the medical community to give information in an approachable way.
Yep.
I think it's harder when there's a language barrier
yep.
on top of that. So I'm thinking that getting your medical records translated
yep.
and being assertive about getting that information, it's hard. I mean, you have to be assertive sometimes for that because you both said you were lucky enough to have doctors sitting with you for 2 hours. I did not have that. But it's hard. I mean, that's something you need to do.
Definitely.
You
have to fight for it.
Yeah, you have to fight.
It's Israeli fighting. Well,
that's when your journey begins.
Yes, exactly. Well, it begins before that. Yeah. I think it begins through every bureaucracy in Israel. But it is another bureaucracy.
Yeah.
The healthcare system is another bureaucracy, which you have to kind of push your way forward and you have to fight for your right. And in regards to information, yes, question. Luckily enough, we have Google Translate right now, and it's got an amazing feature, which I just found out a month ago, where you can hover over any document and it translates it simultaneously. So that's amazing that it does that. And you're able to understand in your own language whatever is in front of you. But then it has to be written. It has to be put down. I would say record conversations. Ask when you're going to see the doctor to record. Ask them if it's all right. Ask everything to be in English. Sometimes it's okay for them to write it in English.
Mm-hmm.
And then reach out, search, have that curious hat on and search everywhere and feel confident that you're going through the journey that you decide to go with. Okay, so at the end of
the day. I think it's also important to prepare yourself for those meetings because of the healthcare system and how loaded it is. You do have a short amount of time sitting with your doctor or other medical staff. Come prepare. Prepare your questions. Have someone with you that might prepare the questions themselves because it's something such an overload of information.
It's true.
And you're in a hard situation here, sitting and hearing about your treatment and chemo and stuff like that. You need to come prepared, and you need to have a backup system for your questions. Because not always.
It's work. You're coming to work. No, I'm serious. You're coming to work. You are interviewing the doctor. They are interviewing you back. You know, it is. Mm-hmm. I came with a folder. I had everything documented because I wanted to be organized. But also, it is work. You have to research before you go into that meeting. You don't come in, as a clean slate. You come in prepared to ask everything and anything. And you do that by researching online so you can research any website in English in regards to your cancer or whatever language you need it to be in. But you come in ready with those questions, and afterwards you question the answers.
Patty, what do you think? What's your golden advice?
I definitely think coming with questions is an amazing idea. My friend who did have breast cancer before me recommended only checking .org website, so breastcancer.org, really clinical, medical, not opinionated, based on facts and studies and medical experience. which was helpful because there are a lot of blogs that get turned into things. And while it's always good to have extra opinions,
I think it's important where you're getting your information from. Mm-hmm. Like, question that. Like,
yes,
not every
exactly.
place. Get it from serious place, serious source.
No, it's true. But I also think, I think it can be so isolating and so lonely to do this in a different language. And I think that doing it in a different language adds like a different layer of exhaustion. And like Elon said, it's work. It is work. And you work even harder because in your head, everything, gets translated. And you're lucky if you have a medical staff that can speak to you in your language. But you have to ask questions. If there's something you don't understand, you have to write it down. I did a lot of writing things down phonetically. If there were words I didn't understand, and then I would go home and I would, talk to my husband about them. Anything that I found out here, I was lucky. I had some people to check that stuff with in the States. So I would send documentation, scans, any kind of initial prognoses for them to take a look at. But I think that, for me, it was also making sure I was seeing people. It was hard, but I think that really helped in making sure that you're taking care of yourself, it's a draining process. It's a hard process. It's a stressful process.
Overstimulating.
So
I want to ask you,
as
Israeli society or healthcare system, I mean, other people are listening to this podcast, what can we do to help people in your situation?
I think a supportive buddy system is the best thing. So the Luach Melavot, which we have in Chalas, is incredible because you can contact anybody that you want to speak to in regards to your cancer. And
we need to add languages to that.
So yes, we need to add languages to it. But I will say there is another incredible charity. It's American, but they're global. They're called the Immerman Angels. And you can Google that, and they are an ORG. But this is what they do. They have over 100 different countries where they've got mentors and supporters to give you everything that you need in regards to your journey with the language, knowing the language and knowing your language. So they're able to kind of, through their coordinator, match you up with an angel. So I would definitely recommend that. But Israel needs it. Israel needs the other languages and cultural support system. I think right now for Chalas as well in Karem, they've got this amazing position for a Mta'em Safa. I don't know, I don't even know what to call it in English, but a kind of a language coordinator. And that is necessary because they understood that there is a necessity for it. There's a need within the healthcare system and in the hospital. And the language is the first thing, but it's also the cultural aspect.
I'm thinking about, do you think about your cancer in English, probably?
I do.
You do? I think of mine in Hebrew, of course, but... And need to translate every thought that you have in order to communicate is a lot.
I think Patty mentioned a few things. She had somebody abroad that was researching for her. She had her husband who was translating for her. Then to create your own buddy system, to have that community who can help you in every aspect of whatever it is that you need help with. But you need to feel comfortable asking for help as well. And that's the biggest step to take.
Yeah.
Because you need to admit that you're here on your own. You need to understand what your need is. And then to communicate that forward is not always easy to say, what is it exactly that I need right now? And who can I contact to be the right person for that? But if we're able to do that, then we've got a community of supporters.
Yeah, and ask for help. Ask for so much help. all the time and from everyone.
And as for your local community as well, I mean, like other parents in Yogan, the community, though you might not have strong ties, you'll be amazed and people want to help.
Yeah.
And I think that you might be amazed at how much help can you get.
That, I have to say, is the beautiful thing about Israel. I have to say, it's just amazing. If I fall down the street here, 5 people are going to run to me and ask me if I'm okay. Also screaming at me. Maybe screaming at whomever, you know, made me fall as well. But they're going to rush to me and they're going to help. And this is the beautiful thing about Israel, is the sense of community and people want to help. You just need to kind of tell them what you need to help with. In the UK, in the past, I have fallen down and everybody looked at me shamefully. How dare you fall down? How dare you fall down? So it is. It is about asking help, knowing what it is that you need to ask help for and talking about it.
Patricia and Hila, I want to thank you so much for coming and doing this episode. And I think that I hope that it will help other cancer patient in our community. So this is it for us today. If you want to continue talking about it, get more information, if you have any ideas for other topics or conversation, you're welcome to contact us through Hala Sultan website or social media outlets or through the groups. Thank you so much, and I wish you both so much help
and help. Well. I do.
Stay safe. Thanks, Patty. Thanks, Hila.
Thank you.
Bye.